I want to bring on Patrick Wardle, the founder of cybersecurity firm Objective-C. He joins us now. And Patrick, I mean, when we look at this issue, it is interesting. I should point out as well, you know this topic well. You're a former NSA researcher about the threats facing us now. In a discussion, Dan was actually talking with the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technology just a bit ago on Yahoo Finance, and she seemed to indicate that right now the government doesn't have the authority to really pressure some of these changes. But talk to me about what you've seen in terms of just the risks growing as these attacks become more prominent.
Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons why the White House is bringing in these tech CEOs to have this discussion. It's really, you know, times have kind of changed, right? You think even a few years ago when people talk about getting hacked, it's usually their credit card getting stolen, which is almost a minor annoyance. Now that we have these larger nation state attacks that are actually impacting both the national security, the economic security, and maybe even the health of, you know, the American public, putting that at risk. So I think the government is really having to step up and say, hey, look, there's a larger problem now, and this is impacting the general public. I think we all remember images of people, you know, rushing to the gas station trying to fill up plastic bags because of the Colonial Pipeline hack. Right? The government isn't stoked about that, right? And so I think this is why they say now we really need to kind of band together the private and the government sectors and really make a push. I mean, if you think about it, at least in the U.S., the majority of the critical infrastructure is both owned and operated by the private sector. So you mentioned there's maybe limits of how much the government can do. So I think it's really a no-brainer for the government, the White House, to, you know, bring the private sector in and figure out ways to collaborate and work together to address this ever-growing threat.
Patrick, this is Dan. I love, by the way, the pun, Objective-C, Objective-C, the programming language. Really cool. I just want to, you know, ask, as far as, you know, the various industries in the U.S., right, there's so many different organizations, so many different groups, trade groups. Then we have, as I said, the municipalities and states. And, you know, there's no guarantee that all of them are safe or are even following best practices. Let's put aside the fact that they're safe, because no one is ever really safe from cybersecurity intrusions. I guess, what is the best course of action to ensure that companies, trade groups, local governments are working to provide the best type of security, not just for themselves, but for the people that rely on them?
Yeah, Dan, that's an excellent question. And that's a really good point. You know, the unfortunate reality is the bar is currently pretty low. I believe for the Colonial Pipelines hack, there's research indicating that, you know, it was a single compromised password that let the hackers in and then have this myriad of cascading effects, you know, that made it all the way to the pump. So I think the good news for that is there's a lot of room for improvement. So I think if the government starts to collaborate more with the private industry, really try to maybe standardize some best practices, you know, maybe we can address some of the low-hanging fruit, which will prevent, hopefully, at least some of these attacks. I draw a lot of parallels to the current pandemic. We have a lot of the tools already. So we have, you know, for COVID, we have vaccine, we have mask mandates, social distancing. We kind of know what works. The issue, though, is in the implementation of that, right? Trying to get people to get the vaccine, wear masks, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the cybersecurity issues are almost the same. We know things like dual-factor authentication is a great mechanism to thwart most even sophisticated attackers. You know, why is this not widely deployed? Why is this not used? So I think really it's almost figuring out how we can implement these best practices. And as you said, Dan, there is a wide range of industries. And I think this is why there's perhaps some of the challenge here. But I think with maybe some government collaboration, some standardizations, you know, we saw recently the White House pushed out a national security memorandum that yep. said, hey, look, these are some of the requirements we're pushing, you know, an annual review of your cybersecurity policy, making sure you have backups, et cetera, in case of a ransomware attack. I think these are definitely the right steps. It's really enforcing or even just, you know, trying to implement these best practices that are pretty standardized already.
Yeah, and they can certainly enforce those for government contracts too, and really flex their power there. When it comes to the threats, though, I mean, I'm not sure a lot of people would have expected, you know, a meat producer to be a target for some of these attacks. And when you look at kind of how that's changed, I'd be curious to get your take on maybe which company stands as the most in the crosshairs here, which one looks to be the biggest target, because we've talked so much about PCs. Obviously, your company focusing on the operating system there on Apple's side, as that's grown and more people use those. So, I mean, when you look at the risks, which company in your eyes looks most poised to be maybe a victim of the rising threat?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And the problem is hackers are so opportunistic. They're just going to target everything and anything. So, you know, say they want to go after a oil producer to pull off a ransomware attack. Well, they're first going to maybe start trying to hack the PC computers, the Windows-based computers. If those are locked down and secure, they're going to try the Mac systems. A lot of times we see Mac users perhaps overconfident in the security of those systems, largely because Apple marketing has told us for many years that essentially Macs can't be hacked. I mean, we all know that's really not the truth. If the Macs are locked down, maybe they're going to start poking on some of the IoT devices that really often are not as locked down as the rest of the network. So the bad news is like everyone's in this boat together. And really that's, some of the challenges is the adversaries, the hackers really only have to find one way into the network. And then oftentimes, the floodgates are open. So I think that's one of the reasons why too, that the White House is bringing in, so many different CEOs of tech companies and really trying to embrace the industry as a whole, because they correctly realize that, it's almost like there's not one specific company that will be targeted. It's really all of them. And as I mentioned, these incredibly opportunistic hackers really just need to find one way in.
Patrick, I just want to ask, we look at how many different groups there are that need to step up their cybersecurity game, right? Companies don't necessarily provide as much funding towards cybersecurity as they probably should. They just don't recognize the threat being what it truly is. You can say the same thing for local governments, although they may not have the funds available. But, I guess, is there a way where instead of going to each individual company, you talk to the companies that perhaps provide the overall services? So we look at SolarWinds, for instance, and that the attack there that impacted, such and such number of people. There was the Outlook attack that we had seen. At what level can the government feasibly say or incentivize companies to help ensure that most services are blanketed in some way in cybersecurity, or offering some form of cybersecurity to the ultimate end user?
Yeah, Dan, another excellent question. I think that might be the approach that the government is ultimately taking, saying, hey, look, tackling this comprehensively is very challenging. Let's maybe start by engaging the big players, the Googles, the Amazons, the Microsofts, whose, technology is really, really widespread, right? Their cloud infrastructure, their software update mechanisms that, if exploited, could impact millions and billions of users. And so I think that's really the government's approach here. And I think one of the things that the government brings to the table is a lot of skill and talent, especially in the context of offensive cybersecurity operations. NSA and some other government agencies are world-class hackers, let's say. So they know what the bad guys, bad women, girls are thinking. And so they can often perhaps provide the same insight for the defensive side of the coin. So, perhaps saying, hey, look, we are tracking these hacker groups. We've maybe penetrated some systems. We can see how they're operating, and then maybe providing that visibility back to some of that. We have seen them do that in the past where, based on some intelligence that they've gathered, they are then able to reach out to the private sector and kind of said, hey, you might want to take a closer look at this. We have some intel. We can't really give you our sources and methods, but, check this system, check this attack. And so I think what they're going to try to do is collaborate more closely with these larger players as really a way to kind of a top-down approach, saying, hey, let's start here. Let's provide tooling capabilities, collaborations. How can we work together to hopefully improve your cybersecurity posture, and then kind of have that trickle down effect where, once that's all addressed, yes, we can maybe then move down to the local governments. But a lot of the smaller companies outsource their cybersecurity technology to these big players. You mentioned Outlook, Gmail. And so it really makes sense to start there. And then, as I mentioned, once that's addressed, and hopefully that does get addressed, move down to the medium and smaller players.
Yeah, well, certainly as we see more and more of certain old school, if you want to call it that, technologies or services that hadn't been online move into the cloud, it becomes a much larger problem. And I think one is why you're seeing the White House address it today. But appreciate you coming on here. Patrick Wardle, Objective-C founder, alongside Yahoo Finance's Dan Howley with us as well. Thanks again to you both for the time.